Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always...
Ben Vanel here, Tommy. The sun is out. The drill has stopped. We're here to record part two of our Game of the Year episodes.
The drill has stopped for now, but anything could happen.
I reckon they might just be on lunch break.
Let's rush quick then. Yeah.
15-minute episode this week.
We got to get this in before the end of the year. Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah.
I think it's December 31st.
Oh, wow.
No, it's the... I think it's the 31st. It's the 31st.
New Year's
Eve.
Yeah.
Yes.
We are putting this up on New Year's Eve.
Oh. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah, if you missed our part one of the games of 2020, go back and check that out.
You'll be totally lost.
Yeah.
Can I listen to part two if I haven't? That's not just illegitimate.
Fuck. I got distracted by receiving a phone call.
Whoa!
Who's calling?
Jeepers.
I don't know. That's why. That's hence the distraction.
You answer,
mystery call.
You answer unknown numbers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm not a coward.
I never do.
It's pathetic.
Yeah. I never do.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Well, you've got to.
You're the first person I've ever heard of that answers a number.
Yeah,
if somebody, that's, it's so, man, this generation is insulated by these pillows we put them in. If you're going to get a call something awful has happened, it's going to be from an unknown number. That's where it's going to come from, and you need to know.
I have all bad news sources saved in my phone as something awful. So I know when I see that flash up, I think, ooh, better answer this.
Well, and like, you know, sometimes, yeah, it's like, you've been selected for tax fraud or whatever, dumb thing. But also that's kind of funny. Breaks up the day.
Okay.
If I'd have gotten that call 2 minutes earlier, I'd have answered it.
Wow.
Right there and then.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'd have been like, hello?
Don't fucking call me unless I have your number.
You mentioned generations, Knox.
Yeah, I did.
I think that ties in potentially to what we'll discuss on this episode of the podcast.
Millennials love video games.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, we've done our personal top fives in the last episode. We've done a couple of categories. And this episode, we are going to be focusing on a few more categories and discussions of the big games of the year that we didn't get to in last week's episode.
Three categories, four games. That's what you're in for.
Yep.
All right.
Shouldn't take as long as it will, but it'll take a while. Sounds like seven things to do. How long will that take? 12, 14 minutes. Yes. 2 minutes each.
8 hours.
Half-Life Alyx. Pretty good. All right, moving on. Yeah, no. Ed, do you want to start? That's where we were saying we were going to start.
Yes.
With my personal game of the year, Half-Life Alyx. It's insane that it exists. It's nuts that a new Half-Life game actually came out. My excitement about that was large. The fact that it was a VR game, I bought a new computer to play it and a new headset for it.
Right.
And I don't even regret that purchase.
That's
the level of quality that I believe Half-Life Alyx is at. It is so fucking crazily impressive to me. Astro's rescue mission kind of made me go like, oh, VR, okay.
Yeah.
And this properly made me go, oh, VR,
totally.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked on the bonus pod a few weeks ago about Avatar and like the 3D thing in movies and how that was trying to be this, will come back and be this new, you know, extra little bonus technological thing that cinemas and filmmakers would try and push on consumers. It didn't work. VR was in danger, it felt like, of being the same thing, of just like this gimmick toy tech thing that a small percentage of people would take up, and it wouldn't really lead to any you know, groundbreaking works of art.
Right.
That's incorrect because we've got Half-Life Alyx. I've played a bunch of this game. I bought a VR headset, this year. I think apparently convinced a lot of listeners to as well.
And one of your co-hosts.
Yes. Well, you listen to the podcast.
That's true. Yeah. I listened live. In a sense, I'm the number one listener because I get it before I've got the cans on.
Yeah.
I get it before anyone else.
Yeah.
Like with a normal podcast, I kind of drift in and out.
I
want to rewind sometimes and just go, oh, what were they fucking talking about?
And I usually,
why don't they say the name of the game more often?
I don't really get it at the time.
Right.
It's more of a way homer sort of thing for me.
And sometimes I listen to Ben and Adam and I feel like they're my friends and that I can actually just, you know, they say stuff and I want to just be able to yell out and you know, chime in on the conversation.
See, I know who called me now.
They're
checking my smoke alarms, but I'm not there. So maybe, you know.
Bet you didn't have to answer the call to find that out.
No, I googled the number.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's what everyone does.
But maybe they're standing there waiting for me to call them back, waiting in the rain. Looking all sad, looking up at my apartment with little puppy dog eyes going, when's he going to be back? He told us he was going to be here, but I never did. I never said I was going to fucking
be there. They never checked. They're checking now.
I hope they don't go into my house.
They might steal your Half-Life rig.
Maybe.
They might take that battery out of your smoke alarm, that battery that you love so much.
It's creepy when someone goes into your house and you're not there.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. I got a bunch of laundry out.
I had the landlord visit the other day. They checked first.
Yeah.
They fixed our oven.
Oh,
so
nice.
So it was great. Got home and there was a working oven there.
Well, what do you use that for? Cooking?
Yeah, cooking. Yeah, my girlfriend made a rhubarb crumble.
Huh.
It was delicious.
Nice.
Really nice.
You made her do it. That's weird.
It's like the 50s around at Ben's house, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I cook too. I make crumbles sometimes.
I will say, and I haven't played Half-Life Alyx, what you said, Ben, about how the concern that VR might be a gimmick and this is a great groundbreaking piece of art in it, from what I hear, that's true. I still do have those concerns about VR ending up just being a gimmick. I think there's been enough things that have really proved the potential of it, but I think the next couple of years is the thing where you really want to see, like, I bought an Oculus Rift. It's great. It just needs more stuff on it that's not just these little, like, poking around little experiences.
Right.
So I'm hoping that, like I mentioned in the last episode, that PlayStation come out with a revised version of their headset and they start kind of pumping it a bit more. Because, more stuff like this, now that we've seen the potential of, like, what you can actually do with a fully fledged game on it, what you really want to see now is that next step of that being followed up on and not it just being this thing where in 5 years' time we're like, oh, remember? Because it could well end up, you know, Half-Life could well end up being the avatar of it. It's like, oh, yeah, this great tech that people really got into and it really showed what it can do. Shame that no one else really picked up the mantle and ran with it.
Because you've got to have the adoption rate of the headsets be high enough that you can make money back off of what seems like quite a difficult thing to develop.
Yeah.
And that's why, I guess, because Valve made this, who have, I think, infinite money.
I think so, yeah.
They had, and just like, they can kind of do what they want. They put the time into it and made just this really good game that is a great game on its own that also has the best use of VR that's happened so far.
Right, right.
It's fucking crazy to be in that game. To forget that you're, this sounds so stupid, but to forget that you're playing a VR game to some extent, because you're just so in it.
Yep.
You know, like the thing of like bending down to do something and like going to put your hand on a wall in the game that isn't really there. I did that a couple of times.
Yeah.
Oh, I got the broken bones to prove it.
No, I completely agree. It's we talk about immersion. Everyone, that's like one of the big, you know, catch cry words of video games.
Yeah.
But it's the most immersive thing I've ever experienced.
It's fucking nuts, hey?
Yeah.
And then, you combine it with like a really fun, light kind of story with nice voice acting.
Genuine tension and like...
some real fucking horror in there.
Yeah, it is. And I refuse to play any more scary game than this in it. I won't play any Resident Evils in VR.
Right.
Because this was enough. This was... I mean, like a game like The Last of Us 2 made me feel like... it gave me tension headaches because I was so immersed and drawn into that really tense story.
Right.
It's that but more in VR with Half-Life Alyx. It's as artfully done... but you're in it. And yeah, the visual fidelity of the Quest 2 is the headset I used, made that possible, I think, right. Because I've not had that experience with other VR titles that I've played. Mm. And yeah, it's a fun, well-written game.
It's a shooter. It's a first-person shooter.
Yep.
But the creativity in what you're doing that this VR movement allows you to have, to crouch behind things and like lob a grenade over your head, it doesn't just feel like you're doing a motion instead of pushing a button.
Mm.
You're physically interacting with the world in a different way
to how
a normal shooter would do it.
There's a little bit. I'm in like chapter 3, so I'm not that far into it. Right. I'm a few hours in.
You haven't gotten to the horror bit either. There's a bit that is like
actually
a flat out. You're okay. Being pursued by basically like Nemesis from Resident Evil, but a Half-Life version.
Oh, God.
And it's fucking frightening.
Well, where I am, I've like had a couple of chats with some characters who sort of, you know, fill you in.
Darby's hanging around.
Yeah. I've met a creature and the creature told me some stuff. And as you leave that encounter, you know, they might be saying a final couple of sentences and you're like, you're like looking up to catch what they're like.
Yeah.
You're just reacting like it's actually happening to you. It's really crazy.
Yeah. It's the feeling of like at first you're deliberately like waving your hands around and flipping people off. But at some point you do end up just kind of nodding at people or like, blah, 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 like doing a little gesture with your hand.
Yeah.
It's really, really weird how quickly your brain goes like, yeah, this is where I live now.
Totally, absolutely, yeah.
The closest I've come to that is playing, I don't think I talked about it on the pod at all, The Climb on Oculus, which
I think
is just,
you did, yeah.
Yeah, rock climbing and you, like I got it thinking it would just be a bit of a simulated easy thing, but it's an actual game. It's like a challenge where you've got a stamina meter so you can't just hang on for as long as you want and you have to like look around and find these little colored things that you can grab onto and sometimes they're not as always easy to see so you have to like kind of hang down and just that feeling of, yeah, I'm actually scaling a rock and you getting up to a platform and genuinely going like, oh, like it's tricking me into thinking like it makes me tired because you buy into like you're looking down and it's a huge drop and you're like you know that the timer is running out and you just completely mentally invest in this reality of that is taking up all of your vision of like, yeah, I'm actually getting tired and like puffed out and feeling that sense of relief at making the next little leap when I pull it off. Like it's really something.
It's fascinating that it works.
Yeah.
And also like Half-Life does a great job with its different options for movement and like how intense you want it to be. You can play it sitting or standing. There's like, I guess, accessibility stuff. You do need to be able to, maybe not. I haven't looked into it, move both arms and things like that. But it gives you options with how sick this might make you and how you want to respond to that. And also just as a game, the music and the visuals and all that stuff are really great. And I really enjoyed the fact that it was straight up a Half-Life game and the story ties into the ones that the prevailing thought was, oh, they'll never be back.
Mm.
And it is. And it's back in a really effective and good way, just as like a Half-Life game. It's great as a shooter. And as
the puzzles as well. That was what I was really impressed by is like, oh, yeah, they can put you in a room and the room is locked and you need to figure out how to get to the next part and you solve that by looking around and using your brain.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I'm going to start playing it again when I get home. It's the best game I played this year. It was a brand new experience for me, even though like VR stuff has happened before. And it just, as like an overall game, I think every part comes together as perfectly as they're trying to make it come together in this game. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't think there's really a flaw.
Mm-hmm.
In what the game is doing. And like, it's not an all-encompassing, comprehensive, do-everything game. It's a very focused, tight, narrative-based, straight corridor shooter. But every aspect of that, I think, is pulled off pretty much as well as you could hope for. The AI is good. The different scenarios are fresh every time. You're not like getting bored of shooting the same enemies in the same places again. Just the whole thing. Big chef's kiss from me.
I think, yeah, the only reason
or as Ben would say, my girlfriend gives it a chef's kiss.
That is Adam's bellissimo mama of 2020.
I think, yeah, the only reason it's not my favorite game of the year is because VR is not as convenient as playing on a, just sitting down and, you know, jumping on a PC or a console. It's
it's very true.
You got to prepare your afternoon for it.
I've got to move my couch. I've got to do a whole bunch of shit.
Rift, which is about as easy as you can get, it doesn't plug into anything. It just goes on your head. Even that, I have points where I'm like, yeah, like you said, oh, I'm going to move that around. And then I got to draw the stationary area thing on the ground. And
it's
like,
a little taxing. It can be tiring. And,
yes,
you know,
it's not as relaxed. It's not a relaxing experience. No. It's not meant to be, and it's rewarding and satisfying and entertaining, but it's not the same as lying on the couch and playing.
If it's
something
late at night, I kind of feel like I shouldn't, because it's like, ah, this is a screen right in front of my eyes before I'm going to bed.
Yep.
Putting on a headset, moving your couch out of the way to do something that you know is going to make you feel terror is a bizarre thing to do. There's a midsection of that game that is one of the scariest things I've ever done.
God.
And it's still a game, whatever. Like, right. That just speaks to how calm my life has been. You know, it's a very good game.
Yes.
All right?
But I think that's fair. It's like if you were watching Jaws on a VR headset, it'd be very scary.
You'd be like, fuck, there's a shark.
Uh-oh.
Oh, now I've got to dodge the shark? Get out of here. I'm putting on the TV. I'm playing a little fucking something else. Something comforting.
Much more comforting, yes.
That's our first award category. We thought, you know, crazy year. A lot of people playing games for escapist reasons, obviously. So we thought we'd give out a COVID Comfort Game Award. COVID Comfort Game Award.
Of the year.
Of the year.
Yes.
Hopefully this is the only year this category.
Oh, God, yeah.
But the 2020.
We don't want to be addressing the carryover champ next year.
No.
But, yeah, what do we got on the list?
So they're not necessarily things that came out this year, even just things that you fell back to maybe or got into because of the time and the headspace that COVID meant. So these are the ones we've got here currently. The Souls series, Animal Crossing, Crusader Kings 3,
yes,
Paper Mario, Pikmin, Destiny, Clubhouse Games, but what's that called here? 51
Worldwide
Games, something like
something
that.
Like
that?
Yeah.
Clubhouse Games is way more fun of a name.
Yes.
And Among Us.
Yep. Animal Crossing was, a huge, just the timing of it was bizarre. As the world was getting locked down for God knows how long, here's this game that is basically infinite, that is very calming, that is very relaxing, is very accessible.
It allows you to do the things that you were just banned from being able to do.
Right,
basic chores, cultivating some stuff outside, just like interacting with new
visiting
people.
Visiting friends, going to people's houses. Totally. And I've talked a lot on the show this year about I was playing it for a bit when it came out. I got pretty sucked into it for the first like kind of month or so, and then I kind of drifted off. But then my girlfriend, just from watching me play it over my shoulder, got really into it, has never been into video games, basically stole my Switch from me, necessitating me honking the madman button and buying a second Switch.
Insane thing to do.
Yep.
Mental. Absolutely mental.
Buying a second Switch specifically for the reason that another person wants a Switch, crazy. Buying a second Switch for yourself.
Yep.
Now we're talking.
Same behavior.
Yes.
It kind of hovered around my personal number five of the top five of the year, because just for that, it was awesome to have something to kind of do with my girlfriend in lockdown. Like, she would get really excited to get into all the developments and like building up the island and everything. Like, it just for that, like, if you want to talk about something that over the course of the year, it really had staying power in terms of, like, and it was cool watching someone else who's never had an interest in this stuff kind of get sucked into this world and sort of start to see the appeal of it. And our birthdays are 4 days apart, and they both happened in the very brutal stage 4 Melbourne lockdown. And turning on Animal Crossing and you go in and all the little characters there are throwing you a little birthday party. Mm. It was just very nice and wholesome.
They should have one character that forgets. having Tom Nock be like, oh, yeah, fuck.
They honestly, they do. Like,
oh, really?
What?
Yeah, my girlfriend's favourite little guy on our village, he wasn't at her party. And she got really shitty about it and then spent the day trying to track him down on the island to have a crack, and then she goes and finds him and he's like, oh, sorry, I forgot, but here's a cupcake. And she's like, oh, I can't stay mad at you. So, it's awesome. All those little things that are built into it. It's still getting updates. Like, they're still,
yeah,
like their
say,
previous
yeah.
ones they've supported for years down the line. They put Halloween stuff in. They've got holiday stuff on at the moment. Yeah, really impressive the amount of stuff that they continue to put into this game. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I think for both of us, it didn't really click quite as hard necessarily.
Not as hard, but I was going to say, I just remembered the time that I was sort of getting a little done with it, which is crazy for, a game that it's technically infinite.
Mm.
It was the Easter stuff, which is making me remember or realize how fucking long ago it came out.
Yeah.
But all the Easter egg stuff, like shaking trees and getting
they botched
eggs
that.
And
they,
stuff. That was, they shouldn't have made it so overwhelming. But I still loved it. And I think it came at the perfect time to have a bit of routine. Because I think, that was when I had no work. I was like getting up every day, couldn't leave the apartment and had nothing to do.
And that was like first lockdown kicking off when people were still like, I'm putting out COVID content. This is, what a strange like social experiment. One was like quite as fucking sick of the whole fucking thing.
And the routine of like, I got to get up. I got to, the first kind of couple of days, it really gates your progress I've got to collect these bells to put this bit of money in to get this new thing on the island and really get it all. It was nice to just have a bit of a sense of routine at the exact same time that everything was just all the days were bleeding into one another.
And I feel like community wise or whatever, like everyone was kind of talking about it big at the same time, which is similar to one that I don't think wins this, but I just wanted to mention it, which is Among Us, which got big during when we were in the big second lockdown.
Yep.
And it was a fun game to do socially.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I don't think it's a very good game. Mm. It's like a lying game, you know, which is, they're all enjoyable.
This game straight up lied to me.
I want Sean Murray to give me Among Us back. It capitalized on the moment.
Yep.
But I don't think like should win as much stuff as
sure.
It's
The translation of a existing board game as well, so it's not
pretty straightforward thing, and the fun thing is lying to a bunch of people,
right,
you know, or being like and trying to, you know, it's a party game like that, it's poker,
it's bluffing,
but the fact that it was in the zeitgeist when it was made it enjoyable to be like sort of a part of that, but I don't it was for that moment and I doubt I'll ever go back to it.
That's the zeitgeist game that we are mentioning. Four Guys, not a game that we liked or
that's
understood.
A flat out bad game,
game
as far as I'm concerned.
The enjoyment seemed to be watching Twitch streamers fall off platforms.
Exactly, like Twitch is maybe the comfort game.
Right, but for a lot of people,
Fall Guys isn't, but Among Us was okay.
Yeah.
My personal enjoyment of just single player stuff, the Paper Mario game and Pikmin 3 Deluxe. Loved both of them, raced through Pikmin 3 Deluxe, both very similar in that they're just, you know, pretty slow, just charming, just very, you know, low key and just relaxing games to be in at the end of a day, especially, you know, around the times that news was getting especially brutal and they both happened to come along at times where it was like, this is exactly what I want to be playing right now.
Yeah. Do you reckon either of them would like win this category necessarily? Or just more personal favourites?
Personal. I just wanted to say that they came out and had a great time with them for those specific reasons of just that category more than anything else. But no, they do not.
I'm guessing you feel the same about Crusader Kings 3.
Yeah, it was a great time sink when I had nothing but time to waste. It's so immersive. It's so complicated and intricate and multi-layered that for a time where you are not allowed to leave the house and potentially have no work to do or routine, it was great to sink into something so detailed.
I think I feel the same about Destiny.
Right.
Destiny 1 and 2. I kind of went back through 1 and then did all of 2 afterwards. And I've got more to say about 2 and the PS5 stuff in a normal episode. Mm. But yeah, I don't think that's an especially good game even.
Right.
But it is such a thing where It is perfect for that.
And I actually weirdly just re-downloaded to via Steam because I noticed, and you know, I'm dumb for not noticing this before. It's free to play now. It's a good one for that. It's
up to a point, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've also put a bunch of hours into Destiny 1 and 2, just not during COVID.
It was a fun COVID distraction type of game. There's lots of very clear things to do that are very simple to do, and it gives you that feedback loop of like, yeah, man, good for you, which was satisfying during that time. It doesn't win anything because the way they've deleted stuff is so fucking weird.
Oh yeah.
But like the PS5 version runs really well.
Yeah,
looks good. But shout out to them as well. And also, you and me, Tommy, I think both love this game. Clubhouse Games or World 51 Worldwide Games.
Yeah.
I played a bunch of fucking Yahtzee on my couch at 4 a.m.
Same, yeah. We were really hooked into Yahtzee.
Yacht Dice.
Yacht Dice, yeah. Lot of fun. Just the presentation of it, really great.
Yeah.
Being able to play... Yeah, played a couple little board games on the touchscreen with my girlfriend. Really, really fun.
I got really into Ludo for some reason.
Yeah, right.
It's such an unfair game, but it's very fun to fucking hate these fake players, to be like, oh, you son of a fucking bitch. And it's all just random dice rolls. There's nothing to that game.
Yeah.
But the presentation of that and all the choices of the games that are included. Mancala I'd never played before and is
Mancala
really fun.
Mancala is fucking awesome.
It's a real good
Mancala,
game.
Mancala and Yacht Dice. I mean, I'd never played Yahtzee before.
Right.
So those just, it's like, you know what? These being the two things I've discovered on here, great.
Mm. Even just the little sound of the clinking little gems for Mancala and the dice rolling and Yacht Dice. Yep. Like, it's all so nicely done.
Those sound effects popped into my head last night and it really made me feel nice and good and very calmed because, again, this came out at a time when I can't remember what. I think it was like we were just out of the first lockdown maybe. I would put, for all the faults of the actual package of it and everything, the Mario 35 collection, like a shame that they didn't do more. But, again, just comfort food, lockdown, playing Galaxy again and remembering what a great game it was. It was like there wasn't much else out at the time and it was just like, yeah, you know what? Just playing an old 3D platformer that I loved at the time and haven't gone back to. This is kind of all I need for right now for this week. And yeah, as a game and a product and a package and everything else, tons and tons of flaws with it. A very flawed product in many ways. They kind of took the piss, but for just playing it again as comfort food.
Yeah,
loved it.
Yeah.
Well, that was like because I mean I guess Demon's Souls came out this year and is in it, but like, fuck, man, I think. Because I think there's a good argument that Animal Crossing should be the winner of this, but I want to make the argument for like the Souls games as a whole because the structure of those games is set up to challenge you, give you something that seems insurmountable, and let you succeed at it.
Right.
And that feeling especially fucking helped me this year.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's specific. I read a really good article that I can't remember who it was by or where it was, but it was
or how I felt about it.
But it was something about how the Souls games helped them with depression.
Right.
Because of that thing. It gives you, the same as how they say break up your day in a small little task that you can overcome. This is the video game version of that.
Right.
Yes.
Where it's like this lonely, oppressive world that you beat. And it seems bigger than you and scarier than you and it's tough to get through, but you do it and you go, oh yeah, fuck yeah, okay. That the satisfaction I got from those games, feeling out of control everywhere else, was really, really valuable to me this year, going back through them.
Right.
And like Demon's Souls is a good remake of that first one. The three Dark Souls games still hold up. Bloodborne is still good. Sekiro I need to go back to because it didn't quite click ever.
Yep.
But those ones for me specifically are definitely my one. And I think if they're the type of game that resonates with you, probably would help with other people in shitty times and whatever. But I think Animal Crossing maybe wins.
Yeah. Well, the only issue with the Souls games is if you're not able to get through them, then you just remain depressed.
Right,
yeah.
Which is how I feel about them. Yeah. I want to be good at them and I'm not, and it's quite disappointing. Whereas Animal Crossing, you can't lose.
For the cultural impact of this year and like the bizarre timing of it coming out, and it really felt like it had that thing where everyone you knew was playing it for yeah. that month. Even people that you didn't even know owned a console yes. at all. You've yes. seen them post a screenshot on Instagram. Celebs and stuff, like yeah. people in bands seeing them on their Instagram. Like, these,
if celebs get into celebs. It, that's yeah, what exactly. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Elijah Anything Wood that has going and visiting yes. people's islands. Like, it's,
if Brie kinda, Larson had liked Dark Souls, then I would be making this argument. But
you can't really go past it in terms of just yeah. like the yeah. impact that it had on the year culturally. Like, yeah. yeah.
I think for most people that and it's deliberately designed to be calm and comforting.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. not challenging and it's a different type of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, Animal Crossing I think was the COVID comfort game of the year.
Well, yeah, but again, I like very comforting for me in that first month and longer term, like discussing it with my girlfriend. But in terms of just actual pure enjoyment of a game itself, for me, it's Persona 5 Royal.
Mm. Right.
A game that I like loved the little bit of it, the original one that I played, hearing you guys talk about it. I really wanted to finish it. Before this year, I thought, what a shame. I'm probably just never going to get around to sinking 100 hours into yeah. this thing. Mm. And having this as my project to finish in the second lockdown, it's sort of the same as you, Adam, helped me immeasurably. Yep, having, like, knowing that at the end of a day, if I was here by myself, if we were doing the pod in the evening, and then I'm just going to play this for 4 hours before bed and have this very, very long thing that I was very invested in the story and all the mechanics of to chip away at incrementally over those months and months and months was just immeasurably helpful.
Yeah.
And so for me, like, that's my personal comfort food game of the year.
Totally. Same with the Souls ones for me, but Persona 5 Royal is worth talking about as one of the big ones.
Yes.
Because Persona 5 is one of my favorite games that I've ever played.
Yes, me too.
And the only reason that, yeah, I think we talked about this on the last episode that we didn't go through Royal was because it's too such close. A weird way to structure new yeah. content.
Mm.
Onto an old game. Like, it's a remaster, a reimagining basically of the first game that came out 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Maybe nearly four now.
Maybe four. 2016 maybe?
I think 2016 in Japan and 17
right,
here.
Right, sure.
It's something I really want to get to
yeah.
one day. All the new stuff seems like it's great. It
yeah, seems by like all it accounts slots it is. In. Some quality of life things, but yeah, just even as a without ignoring the, you know, royal parts of it, mm. just yeah. the game itself. I mean, if you have even a passing interest in RPGs, you've got to give this a go. It's the style of it and everything is just so fantastic. Yeah.
The story's way beyond what you would imagine looking at it too. Like,
yeah.
yeah,
you know, anime high schoolers fight whatever, you know, it's pretty typical sort of setup for something that would make me go, oh, never, thank you.
100%. Yeah. It's like, it's the setup for all the animes that make anime look kind of juvenile and
sure.
and not legitimate as an art form, but it's so much more than that. It is like a Buffy or something like that, where it's got great multi-level writing. It deals with themes that are relevant and serious. It does it in a pretty lighthearted way. Stylistically, it's very beautiful. I love
it's
visually.
Incomparable to any other, like even the other Persona games. I think that
yes, yeah.
game out of anything that's been made has the best
going into just
style.
The options yeah. menu and clicking yeah. on stuff.
And it's
feels and looks
good.
Great. It makes every other game that you boot up, it makes the menu feel just shit and low rent. Like, it's yeah. just so impressively styled. The characters are so great. The voice acting is fantastic. Like, for a game like this that is so, like, in an anime style, to not, you know, typically with something like this, I'd probably give it an hour and then switch it over to the Japanese vocal track.
Right.
But the English voice acting is just so good across the board that it's like, I don't want to hear this cat with a different style
yes,
of voice. I don't
yeah.
even want, I'm not even curious to what that sounds like, because the English person is so good at it.
They've all nailed it. And then yeah. the gameplay itself, the RPG stuff is pretty simple, pretty like easy to come to grips with, but it stays fun the whole time through.
Yeah.
yeah and
changes
there are,
it up just enough.
Yeah. Mm. There are big stretches where you are not doing much at all. Like
right.
there were definite nights where I was sitting down to play for a few hours and then going to bed and going, I just watched a movie for 5 hours. Mm. I don't think I did a single, like when you go to Hawaii, you basically
right.
don't do any battles. You don't,
or on the other hand,
get
it's
to
like,
do anything. Like,
I guess I just fought in this in Mementos for ages and I had one
yeah.
chat with a fortune teller.
Yep.
And like didn't progress the story really. I just did a bunch of like what could feel like busy work in a worse game.
Right. Yep.
But I never really had that feeling with Persona 5, and Royal is the same thing, that it never felt like it was spinning the wheels. It just felt like you were doing a different and a relaxing task. It's relaxing. I think
it's because it's all the rapping is so great. The Mementos stuff, yeah, you're just driving around and fighting people, but the combat is really fun. It's propulsive and it's full of momentum, and the way that it is...
Mementos. Fresh goes better.
It's fun. They make every
hopping
aspect
into a little
of,
cat that turns into a bus and driving around again, like we were talking about last episode, getting up to a new... level of Mementos, and you know, what's the theme? You know, what's the music going to be on this?
Yes,
weird little enemies that you want to see more of. All the actual persona stuff is quite fun, mixing all the personas and finding new ones.
But then, like the social link stuff, like going hanging out with people and choosing the right gift for them and working
eating
your job.
Fucking burger to get a couple more points.
Maxing out those things.
Even like so with the Hawaii bit, like that progresses the story and that feels satisfying. Fucking around in Mementos, you're leveling up, you're getting better and stronger. All the social stuff is like tied into story and the combat. Like you're constantly moving forward in some way.
And there's something about the length of it, and it is very fucking long.
It is.
Because with the royal stuff, I think it's like 130 hours-ish, roughly. But it doesn't feel bloated at all, which is crazy.
There's no points that feel padded. By the time I got to the end... It's got such a nice emotional ending. Yep. I kind of got to the end and I was like, well, let us out of lockdown now, I guess, because I've done this and all right, I didn't want it to end because I was like, I want this to, while we're all locked in, I just want this to keep going.
I was wondering what triggered your Dictator Dan tweets, why they started. I guess, that makes sense now.
I need to find him in Mementos. I need to go into his palace.
Persona 5 Royal is the only version to play now too. Don't bother with the original because it's the same game but with more stuff. Like there's no reason to play the original one.
Yep. And they've tweaked a couple of little things in it that were kind of, I think, little quality of life bugbears from the first one. There are a little... I think there's little things where the cat is constantly bugging you to go to bed in the first one.
Yeah, I never really noticed that. You just run out of time.
Either, but like, there are a few little things that they've kind of streamlined and gotten rid of and sped up and everything. I think there's maybe a bit more voice acting and stuff like that. There's a bit more animation in it.
It's an incredible fucking game. Yeah. And I think would appeal to almost everybody as well. Because it's quite simple to wrap your head around. The story is charming but kind of deep and kind of it's really well done.
Yeah,
like if you found some element of it to be off-putting, I would say still give it a chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it'll justify itself before too long. And this was my number one of the year. If you want to talk about a game of the year, it is a game that I spent a huge chunk of the year playing. So it was my number one for that purely for that reason. It occupied more time out of my life this year than pretty much anything else.
I think Persona 5 must have come out in 2017 because I think it went Breath of the Wild then Persona 5 for my top ones then. Maybe not.
It was my number one for whatever year it came out.
I think it must have been 17. There's no way. But whatever. Royal's out now and that's the
check
best one. Give it a go.
Yep.
So it's also, just an incredible looking game. Speaking of games that look good.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, man, what a lucky thing to just come up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Here's an inventive category we've come up with, pretty unique to us. Best looking game. We thought long and hard about whether to include best looking game.
Now, by this, what we mean is aesthetically the disc itself. How good that looks.
Which game do we want to fuck the most?
I thought it was best game in which you look around.
Half-Life Alyx wins, I guess.
Yeah, you look a lot in that game, don't you?
Best
visual
presentation, I guess. Because it's not just specifically technically the best looking one. But that'd be a conversation. But like the whole...
We're not here to have conversations, Knox.
No. We want a winner.
Yeah.
The overall best visually presented game of 2020. Here's the list we have as it stands. Demon's Souls, Spider-Man Miles Morales, Cyberpunk 2077, Persona 5, R, in Oil.
Oil?
The Last of Us, Part II. Ghost of Tsushima. Couldn't think of a way to say that one that was a little bit offbeat.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 and Half-Life Alyx. Microsoft Flight Simulator doesn't win.
Okay.
I don't think.
Well, it's not. It has huge swaths of it that look like shit.
Right. And it's like very demanding
to
get it running as well as it can.
Mm-hmm.
But when it looks good in a screenshot, boy fucking howdy, does that game look really cool.
Yeah. I mean, just the pure, I guess this is one where the technical element of it is why it's on the list. They right. managed to put most of the world in this game, and some of it looks real.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like the net effect of when you're not, you know, granularly looking at every bit of the ground and going like, well, that's not what Federation Square looks like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, of course it isn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, there are bits where they've done more like bespoke realistic versions of cities. Yeah. Like London looks more realistic than Melbourne. But when you're flying a good looking plane in really good looking lighting with great looking clouds and a pretty accurate looking world underneath you, it's like entrancing.
Yeah. There are moments where you're like, oh, I'm in a plane looking down at the world.
It's so cool.
It's really crazy.
The VR patch for that just came out too.
Sick.
So oof. I'm going to get home and do that as well. Mm. Half-Life Alyx and Microsoft Flight Simulator. Fuck yeah, dude. I got to call my girlfriend after this. Sorry, it's over.
Demon's Souls nah, not really. And...
I wouldn't be for something like that. I'm not going to do it. Just a joke. I'll edit that out.
Demon's Souls and Spider-Man Miles Morales both look fantastic. PS5 launch games and just two games that look so good and have me very excited for 18 months time on the PS5.
Right.
You know, when we really start, you know, this is like day one stuff, which, you know, by the time a console is halfway through its life starts to look very dated, and it's like if stuff's looking this good now, then fuck, the first time you get a Naughty Dog or a Rockstar or whoever it is just really going for it and getting the most out of this is pretty exciting stuff. But 100%. In their own right, look fantastic.
The ray tracing in Spider-Man especially looks really, really cool.
Yeah.
Again, like we all played through it when it was like the 30 frames ray tracing mode, but they patched it to have a 60 frames ray tracing mode as well.
Oh, really?
Evidently. That's recent. Yeah. Okay. So I'm looking forward to giving that a try. I've already completely finished off that game, which is annoying.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it looked fucking good in that 30 frames mode though. Like,
I got halfway through it and downloaded the remastered version of the original and transferred my half finished save over. So I'm looking forward to spending a bit more time in that scaled up world.
Great fucking looking game.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And super fun.
Yeah, very good game in its own right. I think because it's like just sort of like this half sequel to the original, it didn't really make any of our lists or whatever.
Yeah.
But
it was close to being my five. It was my five at one point.
Yeah, right.
A real impressive, like, yeah, here's what the PS5 can do right now thing. Demon's Souls, I would say, is even a cut above that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Because it's been developed for, it's not having to
and
have I think a mode for PS4.
A more creative visual style. Like, it's more interesting. Mm. There's more, like, the boss designs, like, the level design, the detail in all the effects. Like, it just looks incredible.
I think it loses a bit of the unique art style that the original had, which, like, has been pointed out a bunch of times. But, like, just, like, the remade versions of the models have a different look.
Okay.
And it's more kind of grounded in reality than the more fantastical original.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the original thing, but just technically this one looks fucking incredible.
Yeah. The size of some of the shit that is rendering and moving around realistically is
and just so smoothly in 60 frames the whole time.
No load times again.
Yeah.
It's
nuts. That technical element of it changes the way you play it as well, because you're happy to just race back to the Nexus to go upgrade some stuff, whatever, and come back. In the original, it was like a fucking minute and a half loading between them. So you'd be like, oh, well, I'm not going to bother now. It looks, really fucking good. But also, you know, the environments are based on a 2009 game. So they, as much as they have like a grand sort of vista in the distance, you're quite small and enclosed spaces. Mm. Everything, the animations can look a bit fucked, because you've got these things moving around, especially the bosses.
They've kept the timing and everything.
Right.
For,
such a precise.
Yeah.
So it can look a little gawky and a little bit weird at times like that. So just, presentationally, and again, a really fucking amazing photo mode, same as with Spider-Man 2. But it doesn't quite have the like art design highs of a couple of the other games on this list that it's a great technical thing, and maybe if there was best technical graphics or whatever, which there isn't, and we have no control over that.
Demon Souls. I'm creating a new category, best technical graphics.
Maybe Demon Souls
for the PS5 is the winner. But yeah, back to the other category.
Maybe it's neither of them quite hit it, because there's some others on this list that do more with their presentation aspects. Well,
speaking of technical... something that cannot win on technical basis is Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah.
It's massively flawed technically. However, if you own a great PC with a brand new graphics card and a lot of RAM and an SSD, it's amazing. Some of the, like, as you've said, Nox, on other episodes, static shots of Cyberpunk are the most visually incredible thing I've seen in a video game.
Yeah, there's the highs of that are really high. The lows are as low as games get.
I want to read something that you sent to our group chat the other day, Adam. A screenshot from, I don't know where this was from. One frequent glitch includes characters going into T-pose, standing with their arms raised to either side, and suddenly losing their pants. Users on Reddit describe this phenomenon as straight Donald Duckin' it.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Funny.
That's from a New York Times article.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
That stuff takes you out of it to such a degree. I think the stuff that you and I were saying, Tommy, about some of the designs of the ads and the signs and that sort of stuff around the world is a little lacking.
I'm not feeling it yet. I need to put more time into it. I need to explore around a bit more, because I'm just not finding that. I mean, I agree, in photo mode and statically it can look great, but at the end of the day I just feel like it's like, yeah, that's having some fog and then a pink light coming off it. It's like, yeah, that looks cool, but it's not... It's impressing me with how good it looks, but not from a technical point of view. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah. Well, I think the ray tracing does a lot of the heavy lifting for how good that game looks.
There's a point where one of the side missions, you have to help the taxi company guy, and you go on this little tour through his, you know, little building, his company building, and there's like a little bit out the back where it's like the workshop for the taxis.
Right.
And there's like a bunch of, like, five of them lined up in separate little bays, and above each one is a giant fan with lights shining through and a bit of smoke, and then there's lasers working on the thing.
Yeah.
And it all, for me, runs perfectly, and every time the fan spins around, you see the shadow change and the lights move, and there's fucking puddles on the ground with reflections of everything happening, and it's like you're there in a fantastical cyberpunk world that you can't actually be in real life.
It's crazy. It's the lighting stuff with ray tracing in Spider-Man, and it's especially in Cyberpunk, I get it now.
Yeah.
And it gives me the same feeling of like seeing the original Splinter Cell or like Doom 3, when it was like, there's an actual shadow there.
Right.
What the fuck?
You move the flashlight around and it literally casts different shadows on different things.
It looks great. And like the refracted lighting and the reflections and stuff really look incredible. But yeah, just a huge amount of the problems with Cyberpunk are visual on different platforms, and even, you know, with some of the bugs and stuff on PC, if everything is perfectly lit and then you got a dude like holding like with three phones that have stuck in physical space
right
while he's meant to be talking on one, if a character who died in a pivotal scene has shotgunned himself through the air right after he died, that affects the look of the game.
Yes,
you know.
Yep. Totally.
So it can't be on here, but it does look good. The other one that's on here that isn't like technically impressive, but it is, we've talked about it a bunch already, but Persona 5 Royal looks incredible. It's based off of an older game though, obviously, and I think technically, yeah, it isn't the most amazing looking thing, but the presentation of
it's consistent.
It's fucking great, but I personally don't think it fits in this, because the other three here I think all... interesting to talk about from both angles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The one that probably is going to go is Half-Life Alyx.
Mm-hmm.
The being in VR and seeing all that stuff up close is fucking awesome.
Yep.
But if you were to take the VR element out of it, it's a pretty good looking PC game.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The environments are relatively small most of the time.
Yep.
Everything is like detailed, but it's detailed in a normal way that is heightened by VR.
Right. It's like really, really good classic sci-fi presentation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like Half-Life 2 remade with modern graphics.
Right.
You know, because it's set there. but I don't think it's like doing anything so incredible beyond the VR stuff that the actual look of it is the thing.
Yeah.
It's the integration of the look into VR.
Yep. Agreed.
So these last two here, it's a fucking tough ass fist fight between these two.
Last two here, you say?
Yeah.
The last two.
What are you getting at?
If only one of us.
Ghost of Sushi.
One of us could think of how the last two is relevant to the discussion.
There's a big fist fight at the end of this category too between the two contenders here.
Yeah.
That ties it. Yeah, Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah.
Last of Us Part 2 and Ghost of Tsushima.
But yeah, I think was it last episode? Sometime we talked about Ghost of Tsushima and how visually beautiful it is and artful. And how much that plays into the enjoyment of the game. It's huge.
Yep. They're doing two different things, weirdly, these games. Because, like, the environments and the scale and the beauty of the trees and lots of little effects happening, all the leaves falling and stuff, is incredible in Ghost of Tsushima. I don't think the characters look that great.
Yeah, I would agree with that, yeah.
The characters look fucking amazing in The Last of Us.
Right,
And then the environments are good, but like maybe a little drab, but like it's all just because of the style of it.
But I think they're still done so believably.
There are a lot of cool ones as well, like the bridge stuff or the climbing over the... in the sky is fun. The scale of that is conveyed very well.
The island that you go to.
The island and also before that where you're sneaking around in the forest or the jungly stuff. Yep. Like,
all the grass looks incredible.
Yeah.
Pushing out of your way as you're crawling around.
I
went back and played just like one little mission of this last night just to refresh myself before we talked about it. And having played a fair bit of Spider-Man, Cyberpunk and dipping back in on Ghost of Tsushima and them all looking good in their own ways and in their own moment to moments. But just seeing again the facial animations on these characters, which we talked about heaps when we reviewed it back in July or whenever it was, it just is that cut above. It's so much more technically impressive, and you would think it would be such a small thing, but just how much it immerses you in the game and how much just not looking at a character and going, oh, this is a character model, versus like, oh, this, I buy that this is a real person. I've never seen anything like that in a game before this. And it really, to me, as a technological achievement, it just, for that one small extra detail, it just elevates it a million times above something like Ghost of Tsushima.
I think so too, probably.
I agree.
Because Ghost of Tsushima, I still haven't played it on a PS5, but that I've seen footage of it running at 60 and everything on there. It does look incredible as a video game. But also, The Last of Us Part 2 is really well directed.
Yes.
You know, so that adds to the look of the overall thing because those cutscenes look filmic.
Actually, I was going to say that the facial animation stuff for Ghost of Tsushima is what puts it a cut below The Last of Us Part 2 pretty clearly. But the other thing that was a genuine failing, I think, of Ghost of Tsushima is that the cutscenes were not directed at all.
Yeah.
It was just a camera in the middle distance.
Left, right.
Like, the missions were fun, but not because of how they were presented, just because of how the gameplay became really enjoyable to me.
Some of the sequences that you go through, like in the car, the little action-y bits, when you meet up with Jesse in The Last of Us 2, some of the horseback stuff later on in the game, going through like the burning village.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There's some really incredible looking set pieces.
Totally. Yeah.
That
an open world game can't really do to that same extent.
But then Last of Us Part 2 does have tiny, not open world, but broad
their little
area
version of
elements.
I
mean, Red Dead Redemption 2 managed to have pretty filmic cinematic stuff in it.
So, but again, I went back in this last week and finished off that epilogue of Red Dead 2. I don't think I talked about that on the show. And their character models have their own charm to them, but when they're in a cutscene, it's like this is bordering on a cartoon. It's a very overly stylized facial look that you sort of get used to. But then again, going back to just this, the way that Abby, when she her stealth kills and the way she chokes people out, and just watching the look on their people's faces as they're struggling and they're dying. I've never seen that in a game before where
you didn't play Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 right at the last mission. There's a bit
all right.
But just making you really see it and believe that every person you take out is actually dying is it just really adds to the experience and the animation, what you're meant to feel from that game too.
For sure. The animations and stuff are so fluid as well of everyone like running at you and swinging. Like it really looks like a fight happening. It's very fucking impressive. I think Red Dead 2 is still the best looking game that exists. Probably overall,
environments as well, like as taken as the whole. I agree. Having just again gone back and finishing it off on a PS5, it's just pausing it and going, "This is a photograph. Yeah. This just is a photograph."
It's fucking insane that game. Yep. But The Last of Us Part Two, like probably the strongest element of it, is its visual presentation because it's portraying itself as a film and a story, you know what I mean?
You don't buy into that story nearly as much, like you mentioned, Tommy, if you can't see the emotions on these people's faces, and you can, and that's why it's winning this category and why we should talk about it a bit more.
Agreed.
There's a reason why it's on a lot of the bulk of Game of the Year lists, because it is such an achievement in terms of how it looks, how it plays, how it tells a story.
Yep.
It takes a huge risk that I think pays off, and I think that even more with a bit of distance from it as well, like having let it settle. I don't know if we ever got – I think I listened to this after we'd talked about it, but I listened to a thing about it. I think it was the – what's it called? The Girlfriend Reviews YouTube channel where – It's the first time there's been a game where, you know, a game will challenge you in a technical sense of like shoot this guy or capture this thing or whatever it is. But the way that the focus splits in this, the way the story splits, and you go back and you play as this second character who you've been hunting down and you're not meant to be sympathetic for. And the big challenge of this game is empathizing with this character and being in the shoes of this character, and the challenge of the game being something not that's happening in the game that you're doing, but it being a mental challenge in your head is just so interesting.
Yes.
And I don't think has ever been done before.
I agree on that specific level with that specific choice that they've made. The fact that it was it's a prize halfway through and then, like you said, makes you re-examine this character and your experience of playing a game full stop or experiencing a story. It's just never something I've ever seen before in anything.
I think if we took almost all of those words and replaced Last of Us 2 with Metal Gear Solid 2, it would all still apply weirdly.
That's
the one other time that I've seen. But at the time, a similar reaction of like, who's this fucking riding kind of? Right. Who looks like a girl?
Right.
You know, like similar reactions of like, I want my big hero who I liked and, you know, that sort of stuff. Not that if that's a because I had problems with the story the first time I played it. I'm not like mocking anyone who... I'm just doing a voice because the...
If that's your exact voice, then okay, maybe.
Sorry,
I mean, that's crazy. If that's your voice, then like, hey, send me an email.
Send in your that voice message. Yeah.
Record your voice and I'll be like, damn, dude, that's weird as hell. But like, I think just the pacing of the story and of the gameplay in between the story, there were some bits, there were some combat sections that were a little long for me, and the flashbacky style of the story didn't click with me when I first played it.
Right.
I've come to like it way more thinking about it afterwards and think that, it's probably the only way you could have done it properly.
Right.
Yeah.
But just the actual flow of it and the experience of playing it for the first time for me didn't hit as hard as that game hits after you've had time to settle on it.
Right.
So that's why it was only like fourth on my list, because I didn't enjoy it as much playing it the first time as I did revisiting it.
Right. Sure.
And also I played it at a weird time where it wasn't out. There wasn't discussion about it.
Yeah.
So I was just stuck in this vacuum with it and couldn't process it as well as the talk about it and looking at it and analyzing it is interesting.
Knox, as the game. You were stuck in a vacuum. That must have sucked. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be taking my leave from this point on, boys. You can finish the show without me. I'm going to kill myself.
That vacuum joke makes me hope you die, son.
I raced through the back end of it because we were going to be talking about it on this, which I wish that I had had the freedom to not, you know, playing it with a bit more time to really let it all sink in, I think would have been beneficial at the time. It's also just... you know, I'm kind of contradicting something I said last week in regards to Cyberpunk, but to see a AAA like this that just takes these huge risks and really they had this idea for how to shake things up and how to tell a story in a different way, and they must have known that it would piss a lot of people off, but they still went for it. And I mean, when do you ever see that from something that's that big where there's so much riding on it?
Yeah.
Well, I think Cyberpunk, part of the problems with that is that it went in the other direction where it's a lot more regular than normal and than taking risks.
Well, my point was, I think last week I was saying with these big games, people always kind of think that, oh, it's going to be this big revolution and people get swept up. And the same thing happened with Red Dead 2, and then it comes out and it's like, yeah, it's just a great story and a great game. And you can't, my point was that you can't really look to these big things to really shake up how things are done. It's generally just not going to happen. There might be a couple of things here and there, but Last of Us 2 completely contradicts that. It's huge budget. Sure. It's AAA. It's massively hyped. Huge deal for a lot of people. And they just went, we're not just going to have Ellie and Joel go on an adventure again. We're going to we're going to just really fuck shit up.
And that's the thing is, because the first one really fucked shit up.
Yes.
And people have gotten used to that game and more comfortable with it over time. But it was at the time pretty fucking depressing.
Yeah.
It took some risks. Like, the story ends with just this down note.
It's not a happy ending. That's crazy for a game where, and this is the thing that people came up against with The Last of Us 2. You're playing this character, you're either implanting or imprinting your personality onto it, or you're hoping that the character makes the decisions that you would make in that situation. And the ending of The Last of Us 1 confronts you with something that you might not agree with or like.
And The Last of Us 2 picks up and carries on with that same thought. So this is a sequel to the first one in that way. You know, I think people were saying, like, they fucked it. They wrecked the characters, Like, no, this is exactly... I get the thing of, like, well, Joel probably wouldn't put himself in a bad situation like that, and maybe it happened because it was convenient for the story. I kind of get that argument. But also, like, yeah, he's softened from living in this place. Like, there's ways you can explain it in both directions. Does that make sense?
Well, if that's the one suspension of disbelief element to make the rest of this story happen, fine, because the rest of the story is incredible.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing of, like, I had some criticisms over at the time because I'm engaging with it in so much harder than with most games, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And those little tiny story things you pick up on because the rest of the game is asking you to.
Yes.
Yeah. You know? And yes. So, like, It's so much more of an engaging story and presented in such a confronting way that, yeah, you're going to have criticisms of it, but it's because there's more meat there to chew.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's, like, boring episodes of The Sopranos, but you only care because the rest of it is perfect.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And, the story of it now, after having gone through the whole thing, because, yeah, it's a long fucking game.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's depressing. It is, like, a grueling game.
It really did give me headaches playing it, but I wasn't going to stop.
Like. And again, especially when the last bit of it you're doing is this, like, very harebrained attempt at getting vengeance where every other character, well, the one other significant character, is begging you not to go. Right. And you've already been playing it for so long and you felt like you've had a conclusion and it feels like it's wrapping up. And you playing it, you're like, yeah, let it go. Yeah. I want to be out of this fucking bleak world. But then you get there and that segment looks great and is really well done and directed and executed. And then again, like, with distance from it, when you let it all settle, it's like, it all makes sense. But it's like you as the player having the reactions that the characters that aren't the one you're controlling are having is just such a powerful thing too.
Totally.
Yeah. I'm going to do this.
Yeah. It's a great game from standing from afar. I think I didn't quite enjoy it or find the story as satisfying at the time as I do with perspective afterwards.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, there were times when I was like, oh my God, this section is so long.
Right.
I'm fighting similar people again, you know, like... And I was like, wait, where are we in the story now? What happened in between? This jumping around is making me not care about the story because we've lost momentum halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it wasn't so much playing as this other character, but, like, oh, going over events that we know have already happened, I'm not interested in.
Right. I had a little bit of, like, oh, but come on, let's get to the bit where this, you know, the confluence happens again.
You
like
leave
it
a crescendo.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then you'd spend as much time catching up.
Like I definitely, like I literally, I put the difficulty down to easy,
right?
Because I wanted to see what happened when they came back together,
right?
Well, but it was
I don't know. That's not a flaw with the game. That's maybe just a flaw with my patience or the time limit that we placed on ourselves because we do a show about video
where we wanted to talk spoilers and stuff.
I think it's fair to say it, not necessarily a flaw, but it's an issue with the pacing of the game.
Right.
I think the presentation of it is, I get that the story is improved with that presentation now after seeing it through, but at the time it isn't fun.
Right.
It's not like...
Because you also don't really know how long it's going to go for. When it first starts up, you kind of think, oh, this is just a little flashbacky thing and this will be half an hour.
Right.
And then it I don't know how it could signpost.
Because you've done little flashbacks already.
Yeah. I don't know how else it could signpost to. I mean, it kind of, I think once you start.
It goes day one again. It says Seattle day one.
Yeah, but then you're upgrading weapons and that's when I kind of started to think, oh, I think I'm probably going to be hanging out in this bit for a while. But I still didn't even really know that, which maybe if it signposted it a bit more heavily and you just kind of knew like, oh, okay, I can chill because I'm now playing this from another perspective. Yeah, or maybe if they went back and forth. Sure. But I still,
it's still
again, even talking about it, it's like I agree, but I also don't know any other way you could do it and have it be as effective.
Yeah, I think like, that's, no. Yeah. And it's just different from a lot of video games and it's a risk, like you said, where like make you do, but then like Lev turns into such a great character and you wouldn't have the same appreciation for him if you'd have just like seen him show up with Abby at the end and then, or at the, you know, the bit where it goes back and then there's 2 hours of setup and like, yeah, they're friends, I guess.
Mm.
You know, like
it
does need what it does, but just the pure experience of going through it that first time isn't as fun as a lot of other video games.
I mean,
does that make sense?
It's kind of a similar thing to the
piece of work or as a piece of art.
The Red Dead 2 epilogue is a really similar and that's why I fell off that, because it is a bit different because it shows you the credits and everything and it feels like it's wrapping up, and I had a hard time with that because the pace changes and I was like, I don't want to play as this character because I hadn't played the first one. I don't have that connection to that character, but I was like, if I'm going to be dipping back in and doing more stuff in this world, I want to be Arthur Morgan again. Like, it took me ages to kind of get over that hurdle of it being a bit of a, different side to the story and it kind of splitting the focus, because I was like, I don't think I want to be. And then, you give it time and it's like, oh, this
is
great.
It needs it for the punchline.
It's like, this is, I think, the same issue that video games journalists have who have deadlines and stuff, is like, this isn't a movie, and if I was not doing this show, I would have played The Last of Us over like 2 months probably.
Right. Yeah.
Like I wouldn't be going, all right, got to clock in another 4 hours after work tonight. I would have been playing it when I felt like it. And if I did get to that halfway point and feel like, okay, I've got a sense of, you know, either frustration at not being able to see what happens at the actual end or just a bit of fatigue, I would have not played the game for a week and that wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah.
I would have just been like, okay, I'm going to wait until
it was also
I am ready to go back
in. It was also
out
in Melbourne where we were out of the first lockdown and things were back.
I think we were just going back in.
I think we were halfway through. We were, because I was coming back from a little holiday that I took in the middle, and I remember like was going to meet some friends at a bar for lunch or something and had been playing it in the morning and was just kind of like late to get there because I was like, oh, I just want to finish this off and that kind of thing. Exactly what you're saying, Ben. Like life being back, it's like, it would have been nicer to spend the time just with it as a side, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I played it the way I tend to play stuff that I get really into, which is just honking it.
Yeah.
And I would have done that either way.
Right.
But like,
we got a pre-release code not all that long before, maybe 24 to 48 hours before it came out, and you finished it before the game was on shelves.
Yeah.
But like, I think I would have done that Friday anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think because it's so close to being, like, because it's so good, there's more noticeable things for me with like the pacing of the story, especially just the first time you go through it as its initial impression, I don't think is as strong as what's there after you've had time to sit on it.
Yeah.
You know? But it's still great and it's my fourth favorite game of the year. You know?
It's
very, very good. I just, there are some. And also, I get when people are like, it's too grim for me right now.
For sure.
It is a fucking down, and there's nothing redeeming.
Yeah.
Like, it's got stuff to say about, like, but I do think that there's some merit to the idea that, like, so the game's point is that revenge is bad, or like anger is bad. You know what? Sure, it's reductive, but,
like,
but
it's a tragedy, and like you can say that some of the Greek tragedies are too depressing, right, but you can't exactly. say they're not classic works of art. It's just a taste thing.
Yeah, I just get that, like. I get if it's not for some, you know,
yeah.
if
yeah,
that
yeah,
thing
yeah.
of just like down, dig.
Yeah. Oh, Oedipus ends up killing everyone and fucking yeah. everyone and then
he
killing them
to
too.
Fuck who?
Yeah. Like, well, yeah, but you do learn something about the nature of humanity. So, right.
yeah.
But yes.
I do think, yes, I agree that it's like reductive to just be like, oh, it's saying revenge is bad. Blah. It presents that in such a artful way,
yeah, yeah.
That I do think it works overall, but I also get just being put off by the game because it wants you to feel bad.
Yes, yeah. yes, yep. yes.
Anyway, Jackass 2, best movie of the year. Yeah, The Last of Us 2 is great. There are a lot of great games that generate because that was kind of like that was kind of felt like the wrap up. For the I know Ghost of Tsushima came out and Cyberpunk is technically on the old consoles and there are more games that came out.
Yeah. Cyberpunk really should technically be regarded as not being on the last gen.
Pretty much. Should have. Yeah. It should have what?
That was just be yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
But same as Last of Us 1 was kind of like the last PS3 game that yep. was like big. Last of Us 2 felt like the last PS4 game. So we thought for the last category, why don't we go back and say what was the best game of the last generation? Just as a last category to wrap up before we talk about another game.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, going back and finishing Red Dead 2, I am really glad that I left that last little bit of it to do with a bit. I can't, you know, I was talking to a friend about this and I realized that the gap of time that I took between finishing the main game and the epilogue is the amount of time that passes in the game. So I kind of ended up playing this game in real time.
Wow.
That's funny.
And yeah.
Really getting into the role playing.
Yeah.
Like how Ben would go out and camp sometimes
yes.
just because he's like, I think Arthur would be hungry.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
yeah.
he'd be sleepy.
Just doing doing the last little bit of it on a console with a little bit more oomph
yeah.
and just really basking in and, you know, again, like going back to it after Cyberpunk not really giving me what I wanted and just finding it's like this game is just so elegant in the way that it's doing everything. Like I think there's a pretty strong case to be made for that, or Breath of the Wild are probably my two picks.
Oh,
of
yeah,
although
that didn't even come up for me.
It's always hard to talk about Nintendo in terms of
generations
because they're kind of, you know, they kind of bring... They bring their stuff out halfway through previous ones.
It was on the Wii U and the Switch, which were the two consoles they brought out during this generation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the Wii U came out in, 2011, I reckon? Maybe 2012.
Something like that, yeah.
And then the other consoles came out in 2013. So it's sort of... Breath of the Wild, I reckon, counts as this generation.
Yeah, kind of. So Breath of the Wild or Red Dead 2 am I...
They definitely were like the peak of the open world game, which was like a big thing of the last couple of generations.
Yeah.
But I really feel like those two are the peak of what that sort of genre did.
Beautiful environments in different ways and then two completely different approaches to how you interact with that world. And
to the storytelling within that experience.
The Witcher 3 with them as well.
Yep.
That game... I don't remember how it was at launch, but it got great.
Is that the one before though, technically, or was it?
No, that was 2015.
I was going to ask. It feels like it was longer ago, but no.
No, yeah, 2015. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a long fucking generation. We're going to skip a bunch of. We're going to not remember a fuckload of shit. Bloodborne should be, but whatever.
Sure.
The other ones we had on this list, we had Red Dead, Breath of the Wild. I've forgotten about, but Tommy said it.
Yeah.
Witcher 3. Persona 5, Hollow Knight, God of War, and then either The Last of Us 2 or Uncharted 4, whichever, like, one of those Naughty Dog ones should probably be on there.
Yes.
There are a fuckload of other games. I really liked Alien Isolation.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that game was really fucking good.
Yep.
That Call of Duty with Kevin Spacey, that's my favorite one.
I think for me it's probably Red Dead 2.
Yeah.
Or another game that we are yet to talk about.
Right. Well, that's why this one is at the end here, because like I think Hollow Knight is my favorite indie game of all time, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that game is so fucking impressive to be made by such a small studio.
Yep.
And like the next one is one of the things I'm looking forward to hearing about the most. But yeah, so just as like a shout out to the best indie game.
I think for me, it's No Man's Sky. And it's like kind of the story of the generation for me.
Right.
It's just fucking crazy how it went from cyberpunk levels of flop to a fantastic game that people who are still playing it have benefited so much from the hard work of the developers. And then people who hated it at the start, there've been people who came around on it too. It does
kind of sum up everything about the last generation of like the attitudes of the general public towards their the aggression shown towards that studio was crazy.
Yes.
And something that seemed to begin existing within the last decade, at least.
Yeah.
If not the generation.
Yeah.
The thing of it becoming good through patches is huge.
Yep.
Those two aspects of it in particular are like so symbolic of what the last generation ended up being about.
The interplay between the hype machine and the marketing machine of video games,
right?
And people's expectations and disappointment and then
reaction
because of that, and then the actual product being an indie game that was marketed probably beyond its scope, and then it eventually hitting that scope is kind of crazy.
I think PUBG has a place somewhere around here just because like what a fucking like that's kicked off.
And
Fortnite is what a lot of people would think of first with video games now.
Yeah.
Mm.
And PUBG also being this really cool thing at the time and having been watered down over time by aping things that are its lessers, weirdly. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Aping
X Legendsing.
For it's sold so many, and for if I wanted to rank my personal enjoyment, it would definitely be up there. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Oh, fuck.
Sure. Again,
hours into it across two, but it continues to be just about the best-selling game on the Switch, right. I think, even though it came out in the first couple of months and it is a port.
I think they're just wrapping it in with every Switch now, too.
Yeah.
Maybe that was just like a Christmas thing.
But that is a perfect version of that game.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think God of War was maybe my favorite, just personally. I think every element of God of War came together well.
Well, it has the fantastic acting and it has great facial animation. It has that stuff that the Naughty Dog games has.
Looks incredible. No loading times. Yeah. Like the immersion of it where you're just going from area to area fluidly.
Amazing gameplay. I want to go back to that.
Also, though, I think Astrobot beat that out in my Game of the Year stuff because fuck Astrobot Rescue Mission
VR
is one of the most joyful, fun games that came out. I mean, we don't have to crown something. There's too many games.
Yeah, they're all good.
Mario Odyssey is in there for me.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'd be pretty comfortable saying Red Dead 2, though, for it. Pretty much ticks every box that I have for video games.
I think there's an argument that is maybe the best game that's been made still.
Yeah.
The multiplayer's not that good, is my impression of it.
That's not a box that I need ticked. That's a personal thing.
And just literally searching for something to say about. But also,
Red Dead Online is hugely popular. Exactly. It's not as big as GTA Online, but in terms of like if you want to say is it successful or not, it is successful.
Fuck, Persona 5 was good though, hey?
Yeah.
But this was one of the first games we talked about at the start of the year. Yeah. And certainly the first big one that we all got into. We did a big spoiler ep on it. So let's wrap up our Game of the Year chats for the last episode of the year with talking about Kentucky Route Zero TV Edition.
Which I also think, well, A, fuck that name, but B.
I think TV Edition is kind of... It reflects, I guess, the attitude of these guys, right? It's just like, I mean, it's kind of just a funny name for it. It doesn't really, TV Edition is just a silly sort of joke.
I'd seen this talked about as it was coming out in installments. I never quite knew what it was. And then the the art for it, and the like poster is like very vague and nondescript. And then I can't even remember what it was that made me think it was worth going in. Maybe just seeing a couple of reviews once console edition launched. But
Do you know what? If it's not Red Dead 2 or maybe Breath of the Wild for me or one of those other ones we talked about, there's an argument to be made in some ways that this game both encapsulates this whole generation and what it was about and is maybe the best game that there is.
I agree. I think this might be my favorite game of all time.
It's really good.
It's really, really good. It's not, but it sort of exists. I'm happy for it to exist in its own category almost.
Right. It feels almost pretentious to call it the best game of all time to me, just because it's barely trying to be a game even.
Yeah.
But as we all said at the time, like it if it was a movie, if it was a book,
right,
so much of the experience of it is the fact that it is you're making these choices.
Yeah.
And
that's part of why it, because who knows what the fuck a game is anymore.
Right.
Like as of this generation, basically, the idea of a game, because that's when mobile gaming kicked off, that's when free to play stuff and early access stuff and all that sort of thing that's the most popular games in the world tend to be.
Mm-hmm.
This game also, it came out, it's an indie game.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's episodic. It took years and years to actually get finished.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like DLC mixed with early access. It's not multiplayer at all.
Yeah.
It's not free to play either. But like also it's got a maturity and an advanced level, like a level of storytelling and treating the player as capable of engaging with it.
Yes.
Stuff like The Last of Us 2 even pales to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree
completely.
And like, the way that it's presented and how much of what makes it successful is the fact that it is a game. You can imagine like a film of Red Dead 2 or Last of Us 2 that is like, even though those games are great to play, but they are very cinematic. You can imagine someone hitting those beats and making a film and capturing the look perfectly and then being as satisfying as films to experience that story as they are to experience in the games.
Yes. Totally.
You could not do a film version of Kentucky Route Zero.
It could be a weird book like Ulysses or something where it keeps changing the way that it's being written.
But the sound design was such a huge...
Absolutely, yes.
For me personally,
the visual design.
As soon as that's gone, I'm not into it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
What about a book and a tape?
not bad, like those little ones when you're a kid in the car.
Turn page, over.
But yeah, I think The Last of Us 2 is a really good comparison because, yes, it tells a cinematic story in a creative way, like really, really effectively.
Mm.
But it does not explore its nuances in anywhere near as interesting or effective a way as Kentucky Route Zero does.
And it's good Hollywood-style movie or whatever, or like a great HBO series or something.
Yeah.
Kentucky Route Zero is like a movie that a friend recommends that I hate.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's too much and I can't be fucked.
Yeah.
But there's something about this, the way that this game is presented as well, that it's so matter of fact. It's so like, yeah, here it is. And it's also like the thing that makes it a real fucking piece of art is you can take different stuff out of it.
Yeah.
You get as much as you want. Like it kicks your imagination in.
Yeah.
It kicks your own interpretation of what's going on in.
It's sparking memories and regrets and feelings that are going to be different for every person who plays the game.
And the little asides of the writing and stuff, so much of it isn't about a main story. The thing that seems like the main story just ends up kind of going away.
Yeah.
But not in a offhanded way.
Yeah.
In kind of a point of like, yeah, that's it.
You know? The fact that it, like, we can discuss it like this, like, there are, you know, you think of a Telltale game where, like, literally they decide not to follow a story path anymore.
Right.
It's like, we're talking about it in a different paradigm, in a totally different context.
And a game that came out over the course of 7 years.
Yes.
And managed to actually hold together.
Yeah.
Is absurd.
Yeah.
And I think we all talked
like
about
fucking
this.
No Man's Sky could, you know, like, has such a bigger budget, I would assume. I don't know what these people make in terms of money.
Yeah.
But it didn't falter. Mm. It just came out over time.
And it sounds like they got even better at making games as time went on. Like they all skilled up.
You could tell technically the way the camera was kind of moving around that last town that you're in was stuff that they clearly just couldn't do in the first one. I think we all talked about how often in role-playing stuff where you're choosing dialogue choices, you kind of you're like, and I think, from memory, I think we all had the same experience with this where it just, as soon as you got those options, you just knew which one you wanted to pick.
Yeah.
It was so natural. And then even it playing with that towards the end where you would talk to a character and they would react as if you had said all of them, or it was assumed
that
it wasn't just like pausing for you to decide. It was kind of assumed that the other ones, the other options you'd at least thought.
That was the thing that I really took out of, I think, even just the first couple of parts of the game, was that the developers intended you to read each line of dialogue, each option, and to take it on board, and to, they were each intended to be part of your experience of the game.
Totally. And the one you pick, like, there's a lot of stuff you do in that game that blocks off other avenues and whatever. Not in like a choose your own adventure way, but more just like, do you want to do this half or that half? Or like, if you pick one, then the other stuff's not going to happen this time.
Yep.
But it didn't bother me. And it, like, that's the point. Part of the point is like, I'm just sitting watching videotapes in this boat while there's stuff going on upstairs.
Yeah.
And if you do the stuff that's going on upstairs, you don't know what all those videotapes are about.
Right.
Yeah. And they're all, every little bit, like the overall story and theme and all of that works really well. But each of the little tinier sides, all of the small little seemingly not connected things where, like, yeah, with that videotape bit, you put one in, it's like, yeah, it's like a weird path and someone's walking down it. I'm not quite sure what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all really interesting and unique and kind of original little miniature stories that you get in between this other bizarre dreamlike kind of world and story that really fucking just, it gets, it's emotional in like that connecting with you way. It's not emotional in like a damn, my favorite character died. It's emotional in like a,
oh, it's cool to realize that other people understand or experience the world as I do.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, not, and not in meaning like in the same way that I do, but like being able to express through art that we are all humans who are in the world.
Yeah. I think the moment where you are watching the band play and you just watch that song, I think that's my favorite moment of any game of 2020. Playing that, I was exclusively playing this game pretty late at night, middle of summer, just kind of the perfect environment for it. Just sitting there and watching this weird song that all the characters are just watching in an abandoned shit. Is it a motel bar or just a just a dodgy bar?
Dodgy bar.
Yeah, just, it was just incredible, and an incredible song, and just so weirdly melancholic, and and then,
and
all
it's
the,
all those dodgy bars and that Americana kind of it's not about the American experience, it's using that as a backdrop for people, for him, for like living in a capitalist society and that sort of stuff. It's,
and
these
the
massive
weird little
ideas,
interstitials that where you're in the first person view and you're in the play, and you at the start you're like, what the fuck is happening here?
I think the play experience and like the ending of it is definitely one of my favorite moments of anything that I've experienced in my life. I also think the poem at the very end, or like just before the very end, is great too, because it does...
Oh, with the horses?
It does the thing that like great movies and TV series and books and you know, art does. It manages to make it feel like everything you've experienced in the lead up has meaning and has resolution and has some sort of transcendental human emotional resonance. And it doesn't do it by literally being like, remember that thing that you chose in episode one?
Right, in summary.
Right, it's like, it just does it by making you feel all of that stuff at once.
Yeah, and there's like a little epilogue thing that you unlock at the end as well that is just like almost separate, but like it, every little like set piece, I guess you want to call them, maybe like in between all the different episodes, they're doing different things in different styles. But there's, right at the end, you're just watching this TV and there's people talking behind you, kind of about you. And it's this sweet, separate little story. But yeah, it's all on the same theme.
Yeah,
everything's happening for the same, about the same thought.
And it's not all like deep and emotional and... Like, the phone call interlude is really funny.
Yeah,
like, it's funny. Yeah. Most of the game is also quite funny.
Yeah. So much stuff in this.
Yeah.
It's really huge. I want to go back through it again. It's also a great one, I think, to maybe, if, you know, if someone's into good books but not video games, you can go, get a load of this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because it's really fucking impressive. The writing is incredible. All of the visuals and the audio and the music and the, you know, it all fits in.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you're right. The fact that it's a game is integral to the experience.
Yeah. Yes. And it's not the most... I remember looking at screenshots of it and thinking it kind of looked a bit flat and a bit uninteresting.
Right.
But so if that's what's turned you off, like once you're actually in it and you're seeing it in,
it does take a little while.
And everything,
I didn't really settle in until the second episode.
I think
probably.
That's the same for me. Yeah.
Maybe, but by the end of the if you see it through, like it all pays off.
Yes. Right. Exactly. Definitely check it out if you. Missed it. It's a good one for over the break.
I think it's one of the best games of the generation, one of the best games that's ever been made.
Yep.
It was second on my top five to a game where you jump around your living room shooting.
Yep.
Video games are real weird. You can do lots of different stuff with them.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to our wrap-up of 2020.
Yeah.
This year I...
By the way, I didn't even talk about Doom Eternal much, but I think it's very good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I found it too difficult.
Yeah, fun dance, more like a Devil May Cry than the first Doom. Mm. Kind of disappointing that it's not another Doom game, but on its own, it's good.
Yeah, it looks great. Lots of fun. This year, I feel this way, and I'm sure that most people listening feel this way. I was very glad to have video games as a hobby to eat up the time. People that we all know that don't have that as a hobby, I genuinely do not know what the fuck they did to fill the time. Like I said, having something like Persona to chip away at and these big games coming out and knowing that I was going to be able to discuss these things with you guys every week and then in our wider Facebook community as well, it helped me immensely. So thank you to you two and thank you to everyone who listens, because it truly was a very difficult year and it really did help. Having this as a hobby and this show specifically as an outlet was great, great distraction.
I was about to bring that up too. Us having scheduled times to interact when we couldn't leave the house, and even if it was just talking about video games, I think that was probably the best thing to have.
A
reason to catch up with friends and talk about something that wasn't depressing.
Feeling like, I typically on this show I have not played as much. I think we all, have periods in our lives when we come to do the show where we've been busy and we haven't been able to sink the time into this that we want.
I had them during this year because I found it difficult to play games at some point because it was just like, woof. But
I felt like with these things that we were reviewing that I was getting to the end of it and having finished it or being able to sink the amount of time in it really was weird to have, for me personally, a weird little positive out of that of like, I feel like it's making my contribution to the show a little bit better.
Right. 100% having this show to do made the year easier, and it's been very nice to hear some people say that was similar for them to have the show to listen to.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is really cool. So and thanks if you're on that ship. Well, if we made it harder somehow. What are you still doing here?
But if you're someone who just quietly enjoyed the show and has never tweeted at us or left a review, like, that's the majority of our listeners. And we don't have the time or the justification to do our show without a bunch of people listening to it.
Yeah.
So, much appreciated to all the listeners out there. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone. Yes. Great to have video games as a hobby. Yes. Kind of wish I had that money back from the gaming PC that I bought that's now outdated. But, if it hadn't been for that, I would have found one of the rents a little late. But, yeah. Video games are cool, whatever.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys, for listening. Yeah, we hope we... Thank you to everyone who's messaged us. Yes. And, hey, look, this thing's still going on and is, it's
safe,
getting worse in some parts of the country. So, hopefully, if you're in that position, you are doing okay, but we'll be back next week to talk a bit of a look forward to next. We were going to do as a category on this next year, and then the list ballooned out, and we all realized, that could just be its own episode. So we'll be talking about the things we're excited for in 2021. Thank you for listening to our wrap up of this year. Head to filthycasuals.com.au for the links to our socials, the Patreon where you can get a bonus episode every week, the Bandcamp premium episodes, the YouTube, all that sort of stuff. We'll see you in 2021, as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals.
It's funny that I just realized a new Half-Life game coming out really did cause the end of the world. Like that, actually, the joke came true. Anyway, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.